Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney. And you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, and welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week, the month, the year, the millennium, and millennia past, through the lens of original thought. Speaking of millennia past, had a banner day down at Denver Bible Church. Bob Enyard, pastor, back from his creationist cruise up to Alaska, the fjords and the glaciers and the icebergs and all that. And it brought back note of the Babylonian creation account. I remember how I was convinced that I need not go to college. It has to do with Babylonian writings. Babylonian writings convinced me that I need not go to college. I was sitting in a junior college contemplating going for a four-year degree in the Western Civilization course when the professor introduced us to the Epic of Gilgamesh. And he basically used the Epic of Gilgamesh to assert that the account of the Genesis flood was nothing but a copy of stories that had been floating around through various pagan religions for years and years and years. And I remember asking the professor if perhaps the Babylonians had possibly copied Genesis. And he said, well, of course that's possible, but they were all just copying each other and they're all just fairy tales anyways. At which point he went on to, he did teach Western civilization to some degree. And he was a Methodist, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I finished his course, aced it, and then I decided I didn't have time for the idiots at college. I figured it could only get worse. If junior college was this biased against the truth, then all institutes of higher learning were probably equally as biased. So I just never bothered to go back to college. So, I did not finish college, but I am willing to hire people who have. I always have kept that as a caveat in my professional life. But Pastor Enyard brought to our attention the Babylonian creation account. Seven tablets of creation, it's called, and each tablet is a day of creation in the Babylonian story. And the story bears startling resemblances to the Genesis account. Surprising resemblance to Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, and an equally stunning resemblance to Bob Enyard's heaven on earth theory. Have you heard the heaven on earth theory? Maybe, maybe not. You haven't heard? Genesis 1, verses 7 through 8. God created the firmament and he called it heaven. So earth, before the fall, was part of the kingdom of heaven, according to the Enyard theory. And the Babylonian creation account on the seven tablets of creation. It's just got some language in there that appears to have been lifted from Moses' version, and just yet another correlation in a number of things that come together to convince me that, well, Walt Brown's right, Bob Enyard's right. Of course, it all rests upon the fact that Moses was right and real and true and all that. Anyway, by the way, I'm researching a little bit on the seven tablets of creation, the Babylonian tablets. They were discovered near Mosul in Iraq. That's the city that the so-called Islamic State has recently taken over for the pagans, hell-bent on driving civilization back into the Dark Ages, past the Dark Ages, back into the abyss, back into the days of the Philistines and the Assyrians and all of that. So anyway, just a bang-up morning. And since I'm talking about Muslims, perhaps I'll start with our president, Barack Hussein Obama, who, by the way, was raised as somewhat of a Muslim of sorts. He went to a madrasa when he was a little kid, from what I understand. I don't think any religion ever took with Barry, except the narcissistic, self-centered religion of humanism, at which he stands as the God. I think that's the only religion that ever took with Barry. But apparently this past week, Breitbart reports in their big government page, last Sunday, President Obama and First Lady M.O. released a statement thanking Muslim Americans for their many achievements and contributions to building the very fabric of our nation and strengthening the core of our democracy. That's right, he was making comments to mark the celebration of the well-known American festival of Eid al-Fitr. Eid al-Fitr, often referred to, as most Americans know, as just Eid. You know, when we all celebrate it, we drop the al-Fitr part. We just celebrate Eid. Yeah, and we all know, of course, that Eid marks the end of the month-long fast of Ramadan, ever popular. Popularized in so many 1950s movies and television series. You can remember when Leave It to Beaver celebrated Ramadan. Yeah, father knows best at the Eid festival. Who can ever forget that particular episode? So Barry says that Muslims built the very fabric of our nation. Yes, and we need not only go back to television shows from the 60s. I mean, was it Dolly Madison? Right? The Muslim lady who knitted George Washington's keffiyeh? Was it? No, it was Betsy Ross? Betsy Ross, that's right, who knitted George Washington's keffiyeh. Right, just before the big battle. Yeah, before he crossed the Delaware, I think it was. And, of course, we've got, you know, Muslims, you can still visit. There's a series of mosques that run from Selma, Alabama, north to Chicago, from Atlanta right up to Buffalo, New York. You remember that series of mosques that became known as the Underground Railroad? I think you can still visit a number of them. Part of the fabric of the... What's that? Those were Christian churches, mostly Baptist churches, you say? I got that wrong? I thought there was a series... I thought you could visit those mosques to this very day. I'll have to do a little more research into that and see if I may have been mistaken. It's possible. I'm not perfect. Well, one thing we can credit the Muslims with is they did help give us the Marine Corps hymn, or at least part of it, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Everybody knows it, right? Sing along? No, we're not going to sing it, but anyway, the shores of Tripoli recounts the 18th century travels of the United States Marine Corps over to Tripoli to kill Muslim pirates who were capturing and stealing American and European shipping. So at least as far as that goes, the Muslims are a part of the fabric of the United States. Well, and of course then there is the slave trade, because most of the black Africans were kidnapped by Muslim raiders in North Africa before they were shipped over here as slaves. So there's some more of the fabric that Barry must have been referring to. And I know that as soon as we go off the air tonight, of course, myself and my extremely attractive audio engineer plan a giant Eid feast ourselves, celebrating our Muslim heritage. Yes, thank you, Barry, for reminding us of our shared and collective Muslim heritage as we look back over the fabric of Western civilization. All right, so there we go. That's from the politics file. We move from there, since we're talking about Muslims. That carries us naturally into the war file. Of course, we got a story here from the Daily Mail. They're reporting that fears have been raised that the schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants earlier this year are now being used as suicide bombers. Speculation has risen after a number of female suicide bombings there in Nigeria. The latest attack, according to the Daily Mail, came last Wednesday when a female suicide bomber blew herself up at a college, killing 6 people. And according to reports, the bomber was a female teenager. The former Nigerian education minister has warned that the kidnapped girls may be indoctrinated or coerced into being used as suicide bombers. So Muslims now working their way into the fabric of Nigerian history as well. And the celebrations will continue there. So we haven't forgotten about the girls that were taken by Boko Haram and the impotence of the West, or really anyone else, to do anything about it. It's just awful. The girls were kidnapped from the city of Chibok, and other nearby villages. And the Daily Mail reports that Chibok and the other villages were targeted for the kidnap of young girls because they are enclaves of Christians in predominantly Muslim North Nigeria. And the girls are, they continue to suffer. And the West continues to fiddle. And Barry and the British and the French and the Germans. Is there anyone else? The Dutch, the Canadians, the Australians. Nobody can do anything about it. Because we've squandered the inheritance that we were given by our Muslim forefathers. Mohammed Washington, you remember? Yeah. All right, let's see. Oh, now that takes us into the Al-Qaeda file, not surprisingly. Although Boko Haram is not Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda is not Boko Haram. They are all working, I think, toward the same end. A global caliphate, Muslim domination. And really the taking of slaves and women, which is the whole point of Islam, I think. Al-Qaeda, according to the New York Times, Al-Qaeda and its direct affiliates have taken about $125 million in revenue from kidnapping since 2008, with about half of that being paid just last year. So you wonder how Al-Qaeda gets funded? Well, they used to be funded by big money Muslim oil guys with deep pockets who were sympathetic to the cause. But that has dried up for a number of reasons. Hopefully a number of those guys have been killed and drone struck. I certainly hope so. But I think it's become increasingly not fashionable to donate to Al-Qaeda and their affiliates. And it's become more difficult. And then there's the drone strikes, we hope. But now Al-Qaeda finances itself the way the Muslims have been financing their wars for centuries, through kidnapping and the slave trade. About $125 million in revenue. The payments were sometimes masked as development aid for Islamic countries, primarily by European governments. They funnel the money through a network of proxies, according to the Times. Hostages. Yeah, there are 10 countries in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East through which money has been siphoned and funneled through to Al-Qaeda. The inner workings of this Al-Qaeda kidnapping business were revealed in thousands of pages of internal Al-Qaeda documents found by a New York Times reporter while on assignment for the AP in northern Mali last year. Counterterrorism officials now believe that Al-Qaeda finances the bulk of its recruitment, training, and arms purchases from ransoms paid to free primarily European hostages. So Europe, at least according to the New York Times, has become an inadvertent underwriter of Al-Qaeda. Austria, France, Germany, Italy, Switzerland, they deny that they've paid any ransoms, but they have given development aid to various Muslim countries. That's just, it's a sad commentary on the state of Western civilization in general and our inability, fecklessness in the face of a determined pagan enemy, hell-bent on destroying the world, or at least dragging it back into the abyss of the 7th century. And here we sit. We go now to the New York Post, not to be confused with the New York Times. We go deeper into the war file. Dateline Beirut, tribesmen have risen up against the so-called Islamic State. That's right, the Islamic State swept from western Syria into eastern Iraq, and the greatest powers on the earth were helpless in the face of it. Well, some tribesmen in three villages in eastern Syria have forced the so-called Islamic State fighters, the Islamists, to withdraw from their villages. The Post reports that Muslim tribesmen torched the local headquarters of the Islamic State, and residents then held a demonstration against the group. The Islamic State is now sending in reinforcements to try to take these villages back. Fighting first broke out last week after jihadis detained three of the tribesmen. allegedly breaking an agreement between the two sides reached after Islamic State fighters captured the villages. So welcome to a world without a policeman, where one group of savages brutalizes another, and then that group strikes back and brutalizes the first group. And in the end, civilized society has retreated that much further backwards into the abyss. Jihad, indeed. Did he say jihad? I think he did. He said jihad. I'm getting mad about the whole thing, frankly. Thank you, boys. Appreciate that. We have to stay in the war file, unfortunately, as we chronicle the rise of anti-Semitism around the world in the face of Israel's struggle against Hamas. Speaking of fecklessness, although they're not utterly feckless, at least they're doing something. A half measure, to be sure, but at least they're doing something. The Washington Examiner is reporting on a Facebook page that was up that was calling for death to Jews. Yeah, a Facebook page calling for the death of Jews does not violate Facebook's community standards. People complain. That's right. There's a Facebook page that goes up that says, the Facebook page is named Death to Zionist Baby Killer Israeli Jews. That's the name of the Facebook page. And, complaints started to come in from people who, well, they're not anti-Semites. I mean, you don't have to be a great person. You just don't hate Jews and you see a page like this. The page featured an image of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu eating a child. Eating a child, a Palestinian child. And we know that Benjamin Netanyahu and the government of Israel is not dedicated to the idea of killing Palestinian children. Now, they do tolerate, support, and fund the killing of Israeli children in the womb every day. Yes. So Benjamin Netanyahu is busy with the Israeli children and should not be confused with wanting to feast on Palestinian children. But that's a separate issue. It's a separate issue because, well, we do that too, and so do the French and the English and the Australians and the Canadians and just about everyone. And so that's a whole separate issue. That's for another day. That's a debate we don't leave aside lightly and be happy to address when it comes up. But the Jews should not be murdered wholesale for their tolerance and promotion of the killing of innocent children, the legalized killing of innocent children. We have to struggle against that in a civil manner, and we don't put up Facebook pages showing men like Benjamin Netanyahu eating a child. So complaints went into Facebook headquarters. They emailed their complaints about this anti-Semitic page, and Facebook answered, quote, "We reviewed the page you reported for containing hate speech or symbols and found it doesn't violate our community standards." Now, the week before, a mob assaulted a Jew in the suburbs of Paris through a Facebook page that listed the faces and identities of specific Jews to be attacked. And Facebook refused to remove that page until after the assault had taken place. So once there was blood in the streets, Facebook realized that their community standards may have been violated. And within 24 hours of this story from the Washington Examiner going up on the Drudge Report, Facebook did finally remove the page. But not because it violated any standards they have, just because it was bad PR. Be up on Drudge with the anti-Semitic webpage. A lot of Jews using Facebook, and the boys at Facebook don't want to lose any ad revenue, so they finally took down the page. All right, and so now for the most ridiculous story of the week, we have to go into the war file again over to the United Nations. Yes, for the most ridiculous story of the week, we're typically in one of the circuit courts here in the United States or over at the UN, quite possibly in the Senate or the House. Usually it's usually the legislature, the judicial, or the UN, where you'll find the most ridiculous story of the week. And this is it. As reported by Breitbart on their Big Peace page, the UN top human rights official has condemned Israel for its military actions to stop Hamas rocket attacks. Well, we already knew that, right? And they have accused the Jews of deliberately defying international law in a way that may constitute war crimes. Yeah. Well, yeah, they've been working this up for years, you know, since the 2007 Hezbollah war, when every time the Jews sent a round downrange, they were accused of war crimes by someone at the United Nations. But among the UN's accusations this time that might be a war crime is that Israel has refused to share its Iron Dome missile defense shield with the governing authority of Gaza, which is Hamas. So the most outrageous and ridiculous, laughable story of the week comes from the UN, upset with Israel, saying it may be a war crime that they haven't shared their missile defense shield with the Hamas, who is sending their rockets into Israel indiscriminately. Yes, the UN chairwoman saved her harshest condemnations for what she termed Israeli targeting of UNRUN schools and UNRUN hospitals in Gaza. That's right. Yeah, terror rockets, by the way, were found on UN property in Gaza. You remember that? Yeah, it was in a school. Couple of schools. Oh, three schools. Kept finding these Hamas rockets on all this UN property. And what did the UN do with the rockets when they found them? They returned them to Hamas. Yes, the UN found the rockets in the school, and they returned the rockets to Hamas, and the rockets were promptly launched on southern Israel. By the way, current members, according to Breitbart, current members of the UN Human Rights Council include China, Russia, Cuba, and Saudi Arabia, appropriately enough, on the UN Human Rights Council. So we'll laugh that story off. The Jews haven't shared Iron Dome with the nations who desire to launch rockets at them. Perhaps that's a war crime. At least in my memory, and it probably goes back further, but the 07 war with Hezbollah, where the Hezbollah fought Israel to a stalemate there in the north, the UN has been ginning up accusations for a war crimes tribunal that will no doubt be put together in the not-too-distant future, should something not drastically and dramatically change in the outlook of the world as regards the state of Israel and the fanatic pagans who wish to destroy that nation. Something's got to give fairly soon, because the UN, they're probably hiring lawyers as we speak to put the tribunal together, to put the governing officials in Israel on trial for war crimes. Now, we in the personhood movement, who want to protect the unborn children that the government of Israel, the United States, Britain, Canada, Germany, Australia, is there anyone I missed? Well, just about everybody else in the so-called civilized world. Those of us who want to protect those children through the advancement of personhood laws, recognizing the inalienable right to life of every person from the very beginning of their development, we don't want to put anyone on trial when that happens. We don't want to impose personhood laws retroactively and start arresting people. But they're not us. We're not a part of them, that's for sure. They're the antithesis of what we are. And, it's just outrageous, ridiculous, and laughable. And let's move on from that. We'll go into the politics file. The Washington Times is reporting that an independent panel appointed by the Pentagon and Congress says that America's armed services are becoming too weak for today's global threats. Well, do you think? I think that's fairly obvious as we see ISIS sweep through Nineveh province, as we see Boko Haram kidnapping girls, we see Vladimir Putin pretty much doing whatever he wants. It's pretty obvious that we've become too weak. Well, the National Defense Panel, according to the Times, called on the president to dump his 2014 defense review and write a broader strategy. That his defense review, by the way, calls for slashing the military and abandoning the two-war footing that America has been on since the end of World War II. The ability to fight two wars simultaneously, well, that's been abandoned by the Ho administration. And the National Defense Panel, who was appointed again by the Pentagon and Congress, they want the president to write a broader strategy that requires the military to fight on multiple fronts at once. So here's a sign of Obama's victory and the defeat of common sense military strategy. Because the National Defense Panel is not calling on Barry to return the military to levels that could win two wars on two fronts simultaneously. They just say they want him to be able to fight on multiple fronts. So that's a fallback position right there. So Barry and the socialist, suicidal, hedonistic, self-absorbed children who run the country, they've won. They've won another small victory against the forces of common sense and an American greatness. They've won. Let's see. This panel also said that the shrinking armed forces of America are inadequate to give the future strategic. Oh, I'm sorry. Inadequate given the future strategic and operational environment. See, nobody really knows what the future strategic and operational environment is going to be. It's just hard to say, right? I mean, I don't know. You don't know. These people on the National Defense Panel don't know. Barry doesn't know half the stuff until he sees it on the news when it comes to international crises and violence erupting around the world. So nobody really knows. That's why it's better to be prepared. And believe me, I was in the military. There's a lot of waste in the military, I know. There's a lot of waste and there's a lot of things that can be cut. I know, I believe that. But the idea of being able to fight and win two wars simultaneously should not be abandoned. In fact, if the president that abandoned it should be impeached. But I've already called, a lot of people are talking about impeachment over the past week or so. You know that I've called for Obama to be arrested and then impeached. We have to arrest him first in order to impeach him. Arrest and impeach, that's my platform. Arrest. Then impeach. Anything more here from the National Defense Panel? The panel knocks Barry's strategy of going from being able to defeat two enemies nearly simultaneously to hopefully being able to defeat one and deny the objectives of a second. I'm not sure what the deny objectives. I guess that means not lose right away to the second. And I'm not even so sure that Barry's strategy will leave us in good shape to defeat the first, since we really don't know where the threat's going to come from. The National Defense Panel says we find the logic of the two-war construct to be as powerful as ever, as do I. And yes, I know it's wasteful, and I've seen it myself. I lived it. But believe me, there are things that the government wastes money on that are far more destructive than military spending. Yes, far more destructive. The government's involved in an awful lot of things they should not be involved in. Overfunding the military to be secure is not one of the more destructive ones. Okay? All right. Now, we go into the, oh, that's bad news file. It's a subset of the politics file. Really bad news this week. You remember last week we talked about the fact that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is being pressured by other socialist, suicidal, heathen children who've taken over the country. She's being encouraged by them to retire while Barry still has the Senate so he can replace her with another suicidal, hedonistic, socialist creep. And she says no. She says, quote, she plans to, quote, stay for a while. Yeah, Ruth says, I will do this job as long as I can do it full steam. When I can no longer think sharply, that will be the time for me to leave the court. Unquote. It's Ruth Bader Ginsburg tape that we got from. Yeah, she was speaking with friends, I think. But she's going to hang around for a while. Unfortunate, we were hoping. Let's see, this is reported from thehill.com, which is, I don't know what it is. It's a bunch of political hacks who follow such things. They do report that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is expected to be the next justice to die. I'm stepped down. I'm sorry. What's the line from the Bible? From dust you were taken, and from dust you shall return. Let Ruth Bader Ginsburg get back to where she come from, is what I... And now I want to make clear that I'm not calling for anyone to harm Ruth Bader in any way. Certainly not. I wouldn't want anyone to harm her in any way. Just hoping that she will succumb to the forces of gravity and the laws of physics in the not-too-distant future. And I don't care if she does it while Barry has the Senate or not. Oh, by the way, I have to comment on this because I was actually shocked, and I'm not shocked very easily. I read this news all week. There's stories I have to... It's just unbelievable what I have to process during the week preparing for this program. And so I'm not easily shocked, but I actually was shocked a couple of nights ago. I've been seeing commercials on CNN, where I check in for news from the leftists, the suicidal socialists, heathens. I always check in on CNN, see what they're talking about. I've been seeing commercials for John Walsh's new show called The Hunt. And I've followed John Walsh's career for 20 years since his son was murdered and he became a crusader to capture killers on the run. And I will admit that I've kind of been wanting to catch the show because I don't watch a lot of TV. There aren't a lot of shows that I follow. Lately, myself and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we've been watching, what's the name of the show? Is it Flip or Flop? Flip or Flop on the HGTV, I think. Anyway, it's a couple with some kids. They're normal. They appear to be Christian and just normal people who flip houses. That's about all we can watch anymore. We can't watch any dramas. We can't watch any of the... we used to watch a lot of the Forensic Files and stuff like that. It's just hard to watch anymore. But I'll admit I was looking forward to catching John Walsh's new show because I knew he had already captured one guy, died in a shootout, and I think another one died today. Which is just great news. John Walsh has done great work throughout his career, helping capture these murderers who think they've gotten away with it. So I've always had a certain amount of respect for John Walsh. Well, his new show, The Hunt, on CNN, that show does for justice what pornography does for sex. In fact, that show, The Hunt, John Walsh's The Hunt on CNN, is outright pornographic. It's outright pornographic, glorifying the deviant sexual angle of every story it covers. I only watched about half of one show before I realized what was going on. The melding of violent murder and sex. And I was shocked to think that John Walsh is involved in this production. Did he know going in that this is what they were going to do? Well, based on a few things that Walsh said during the show, I think he did. I mean, he actually said of one murderer, after the CNN producers produced a montage of sexually explicit pornographic material about the murderer's lifestyle, John Walsh actually came on and said, "Now, you may think it's sexy." And that's when I had to change the channel. I was like, "No, John, I actually don't think it's sexy. I think it's criminal and just awful that you have fallen to work with a bunch of perverts on CNN and produce what the characters on South Park referred to as murder porn." Yeah, I caught an episode of South Park one night, and they were upset with their parents for watching what they called murder porn. And I wasn't sure what they meant. I mean, I had a pretty good idea what I thought they must mean, because they referenced these true crime cable channels. But now I've seen it. I know exactly what it is. Because John Walsh is part of a production that is murder porn. Pornography mixed with murder. And it's just, I don't know. I wish I could talk to John Walsh and say, what are you thinking about, man? I mean, is your career in that dire a straits that you're willing to do this to go for ratings? It's just sick and disgusting. Somebody please get a hold of John Walsh and tell him to stop, for crying out loud. I mean, all right, I'll move on from that. I'll move on to, let's see, the decriminalization of polygamy, I think is what this is. This is from WorldNet Daily. Last week, a couple of circuit judges issued an opinion stating that constitutional amendments defining marriage, particularly in the Commonwealth of Virginia, as a union of one man and one woman, were unconstitutional. So Circuit Judges Henry F. Floyd and Roger L. Gregory issued an opinion stating that the marriage amendment in Virginia was unconstitutional because it defined marriage as one man, one woman. Okay, so that's the way I read the paragraph, but this is how it's actually written. These circuit judges, WorldNet Daily reports, voted to strike down the constitutional amendment. Well, they voted. It doesn't matter what they voted. They're judges. They issued an opinion is what they did. But since a couple generations ago, we Americans decided that we would give the courts the authority to declare the right to kill innocent people, from that time forward, judges now are perceived to have the ability to strike down laws. And it's scary that we've given them this power, but it has been given to them. And it's a power that they don't actually have if someone would just stand up to them. That's why I've been waiting for a sheriff somewhere to stand up and say, "No, I don't care what your opinion is, Mr. Judge. You can't rule the Constitution unconstitutional. You can't rule God's law as not law. It's just, you can have your opinion, you can issue your opinions, and you can hand it off to your paralegals and have them regurgitate it for the media, but it's just your opinion, Mr. Judge, for crying out loud. Striking down the idea that marriage is one man and one woman, that's from the Bible, for crying out loud. A judge can't strike that down. And if he has an opinion that that is not right, that more than one man and one woman should be allowed to marry, if he has that opinion, well, he should be impeached and kicked out of office, quite possibly arrested first. These judges said, over the decades, the Supreme Court has demonstrated that the right to marry is an expansive liberty interest that may stretch to accommodate changing societal norms. Norms? Is this normal now, in your opinion, Mr. Judge? that marriage is not one man and one woman. If you think that's normal, well, you probably should be arrested, and you certainly should be impeached, and your opinion should be written off as meaningless drivel of a madman or a criminal, some kind of deviant criminal, for crying out loud. Liberty Counsel issued a statement on this. Their special counsel said, quote, first, you have the court proclaiming that the right is ever expanding, and then you have this language that adults should be free to choose to love who they want to love. We already have now challenges to the polygamy bans. Do you know that polygamy is against the law in most states? Yes, it is. You can't have three or four or five people getting married. But they're now the deviants, the socialist, secular children who run the country are now pushing back against polygamy bans because we should be able to love whoever we love, marry whoever we want. The Liberty Counsel special counsel says, what's to say the line can't be drawn to allow 3, 2, 4, 5, 7 people to marry? Well, there's nothing that says that. If you allow a judge's opinion to stand as if it were a law. It's not a law. It's the opinion. It's the opinion of a judge who's probably some kind of sexual pervert and who should be kicked out of office. All right. So stop bowing to the judiciary as if they are in the place of God. They are not. In fact, they're on opposite sides if you look at their rulings. All right. Now, speaking about, since we're talking about judges and lawyers, this is from the first Kill All the Lawyers file, which is not to be interpreted literally. It's a figurative statement. The file is it's the first Kill All the Lawyers file. Judge Wade McCree. Oh, there's been a ruling in the case of Judge Wade McCree. Where is he from, for crying out loud? Wayne County, Michigan, Judge Wade McCree. Last Monday, the Sixth Circuit Court in Michigan held that Judge Wade McCree is immune from a civil suit brought by a man with whose wife Judge McCree had been carrying on an affair with, that affair ultimately ending in an abortion. So this man and his wife are getting divorced. They go before Judge McCree. Judge McCree ends up having an affair with the man's wife. Needless to say, the man made out very poorly in the case. And the facts are what they are. The affair ended in the abortion, the murder of an innocent child as well. And so the husband tried to sue the judge. But the other judges, which are just lawyers in robes, they ruled that judicial immunity applies and this man can't sue the judge civilly, even though the judge had an affair with his wife. Well, this is why having an affair with someone's wife should be a crime. Because a judge is not allowed to commit a crime. That could be an overstatement, as a matter of fact. Perhaps judges are allowed to commit crimes. But anyway, Judge McCree will not be sued by the man whose wife he defiled and whose step-grandchild he murdered. And he murdered his own child, this judge did. Unbelievable. That's from the first Kill All the Lawyers file. Kill all the lawyers before they become judges, he said in a figurative sense, meaning that their careers should be ended, and they should be forced to get gainful employment that actually contributes to society instead of being net parasites on society. All right, I'm going to stop with the lawyers. Okay, let's move on to another. Well, I can't move on just yet, because here's another one from the first Kill All the Lawyers file, that figurative file, meaning end their careers and make them get real jobs. A 23-year-old Brooklyn man was convicted of murder, and he was sent to prison for 15 years to life, but now the state's highest court has overturned the guilty verdict because the murderer's mother could not find a seat in the courtroom during jury selection, so they're calling it a technicality. Since the convicted murderer's mother was not allowed to be seated in the room during jury selection, the judges in New York have overturned the murder conviction. Yes, his lawyers came and said, this is a violation, and it requires a new trial. By golly. not letting the man's mother into the courtroom during jury selection. We need a new trial. And the judges gave it to him. Defense, the lawyers for the murderer. He is a convicted murderer, by the way. Unless you want to close your eyes and believe that the first trial never happened, which is what these judges insist we all do. The defense attorney said they're mulling whether to accept a plea deal or go back to trial. Hey, why not go back to trial? Everyone's obviously insane. There's a good chance the murderer will get away with it. I really think it goes back even further than the 60s. I'm sure it does. This type of insanity in the judiciary. But anyway, the 60s is where my frame of reference starts. And I think things have really gone downhill as far as justice and righteousness and goodness and the promotion of that which is good and moral and right over that which is wicked and evil and destructive. It seems to have been sliding steadily downhill since, well, oddly enough, since the year of my birth, 1968. I remember the show. I watched it in the 80s. It was 1968, A Crack in Time. And, well, here we are. It's 40 years hence, 40-some-odd. Speaking of justice, we go now into the justice file. A year after Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper signed the temporary reprieve for Chuck E. Cheese killer Nathan Dunlap, Dunlap's sentence has still not been carried out. Nathan Dunlap was sentenced to die. But no one knows for sure when the reprieve may be lifted. This is from CNN. Their website is promoting another pornographic series they have on called Death Row Stories. And it's not pornographic in the sense that John Waltz's show is pornographic. His show is actually pornographic. This is just intellectual pornography on Death Row Stories. They take the hardest, most complicated stories from as far back as you can possibly go, where 80% of the people who actually know what happened are all dead, and they tell the stories as if the murderers are all pure as the wind-driven snow altar boys who were obviously railroaded, usually by white guys. Just that's the show that CNN is promoting with this article about Nathan Dunlap. I'll remind you who Nathan Dunlap is if you're not from Colorado or don't live in Colorado. Nathan Dunlap was upset that he had been fired from a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant, and he went into the restaurant after his firing, and he shot and killed Sylvia Crowell, 19 years old, Colleen O'Connor, 17, Ben Grant, 17, Marge Kohlberg, 50, who was the mother of two children, and another man who was shot and survived, Bobby Stevens. In 1996, Nathan Dunlap was convicted on 4 counts of murder, and he was unanimously sentenced to death. But John Hickenlooper, because John Hickenlooper bears a lot of guilt in his own mind, because he is one of the suicidal socialist children with blood on his hands for what he's done, the people who he has overseen while they were slaughtered, the innocents that for whose death he bears responsibility. He's so consumed with guilt in his own heart and mind that he did not have the nerve to execute or to allow the execution of Nathan Dunlap to be carried out. So Hickenlooper has issued a temporary reprieve, and out here in Colorado, those of us who are staunch proponents of an effective, swift, and just death penalty are wondering if Bob Beaupre, who's the latest spineless Republican establishment weasel that's been foisted upon us by the most pathetic Republican Party in the country, the one here in Colorado, we're wondering if Bob Beaupre is going to seize this issue as a major campaign issue. The death of Nathan Dunlap, demanding justice for the victims of the Chuck E. Cheese massacre. I haven't heard Bob Beaupre speak a word about it. If you have, please send it to me. Perhaps I've overlooked it. I got to admit, I don't follow Beaupre because I think he's a spineless weasel, as I said earlier. Anyway, Hickenlooper says, Dunlap wrote a letter to Hickenlooper saying, because of the horrible things I did, I don't feel I have the right to ask for clemency. But I'm asking for clemency. Why? Because I'd like to spare my family and friends from the same pain that I caused the victims' families. Okay, so Nathan Dunlap has a fundamental misunderstanding. We're concerned about your family and friends. You've already ruined their lives by what you did. To a certain degree, you have ruined their lives. And the state of Colorado would be elated at your execution. There would be celebrations. We would rejoice when we saw the vengeance come down upon you. Number one, because we want to see the vengeance. And number two, because it's the best bet that your soul might be saved from hell. One of the best ways to get someone thinking about Jesus is to let them know you're about to meet him. And Nathan, we would like to arrange that just as soon as possible. And while I doubt I could be persuaded to vote for Bob Beaupre for governor, if he came out and said that unequivocally that he will see to it that Nathan Dunlap's execution is carried out, I would consider voting for Bob Beaupre. I would consider it. I've got the rest of the stuff. Hickenlooper could not carry out the explanation because he says there's a legitimate question as to whether we as a state should be taking lives, he said. As the state funds abortion clinics across the state, he says there's a question as to whether or not the state should take lives, as he is taking lives daily. Hypocrite. And he also said Colorado's system for capital punishment is not flawless. Well, neither is their policy on abortion. Some women go to the clinic and they change their mind and they come out. So it's not flawless. John, you haven't managed to kill all the babies that were sentenced or scheduled to die, but you still carry it out every day, John. By the way, James Holmes' trial, he's the Aurora Theater shooter. Everybody knows him, right? One of the worst massacres in the history of the country. He's going to go on trial here in Colorado beginning in December, allegedly. That keeps getting moved back as they try to figure out just how crazy the guy is. Anyway, so 20 years from now, I'll probably be railing against the fact that James Holmes hasn't been put to death here in the state of Colorado, if I'm still doing this. I may stop watching the news by then just so that I can avoid having some kind of conniption or coronary or stroke while I'm reading the news. All right. From the personhood file, Mississippi's only abortion clinic will remain open. A federal appeals court has issued an opinion stating that a Mississippi law that would have closed the state's only abortion clinic is unconstitutional. So they issued an opinion stating that they thought that Mississippi, that this law would close the only, but the report from National Journal says that a federal appeals court has struck down a Mississippi law that would have closed the state's only abortion. They struck it down, did they? Well, if I'm the sheriff in Mississippi and I decide I don't want any baby killing in my town, I'm gonna posse up and go up there and just see if these judges can come and enforce their opinion, because it's only an opinion. Oh, I pray for the day that a sheriff stands up. A three-judge panel opined regarding the 2012 law. This is another abortion regulation. It required physicians performing more than 10 abortions a year to be certified in obstetrics and gynecology and have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. So another effort of feckless, hapless Republicans who want to clean up the abortion business by making sure that they only have top-notch doctors butchering children thinking that that will close the clinic. You know what will close the clinic? One brave sheriff and the people of Mississippi standing up and saying, we are going to stop killing innocent people. But you know what the sad fact is? The sad fact is that the desire of the people in Mississippi and across this country, the desire of the people to kill the innocent for their own selfish purposes now outweighs our founding values as a nation. That bloodlust, I shouldn't call it a bloodlust, because it really started as just a desire, a selfish desire for sex without consequences and sexual libertinism, has evolved and morphed and metastasized into something that has squelched the founding values of the country, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That has been pushed down beneath now a callous, a thick callous of selfishness and self-indulgence that has led even to the killing of the innocent who are convenient and disrupt the desires of the people. So the sinful desires of the people have squelched the founding values of the nation. Now, how do we get back to where we were? Do we look to the Declaration? Do we look to the Constitution? We can look to those. And we should also look to the ideas that those men were influenced by, and those ideas come from the laws of nature and nature's God, the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Jews, the Father of Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. That's where we need to look. I guess that's my big advice for the week. And it's always that simple. Jesus Christ is the answer. He has the answers. He proved himself to have the answers when he raised himself from the dead. Let's see. National Journal, Mississippi. Judges striking down laws. Oh, back to the story here. Supporters argue that the law was meant to protect women's health. The governor there, he signed the law, and he says he wants to make Mississippi abortion-free, but he can't seem to work up the stones to actually do it. He's a sitting governor. I mean, what are the feds going to send the National Guard if he closes the abortion clinic? Well, bring it on, I would say. I thought Governor Phil Bryant was maybe the guy, but I guess it's scary to try to stand up in the face of history and to try to do the great thing. I guess it's harder than, or I think maybe men who percolate up to that level where they can be elected governor, maybe they're just too compromised, and there really is no hope. And Governor Phil Bryant is just another in a long list of Republicans who have disappointed us. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. And it's sad to have to say that, but perhaps going forward, another generation will rise up. A generation that wasn't produced in the corruption of the government education system, both primary, secondary, university, college. One who doesn't believe that lawyers and judges sit in the have usurped the place of God. Perhaps a younger generation will rise up, and someone who hasn't been corrupted will have the strength and the courage to stand up and to do what's right, and to tell these lawyers that we're not going to tolerate this violence any longer. We're not going to tolerate the proctocracy any longer. Perhaps. For all you parents out there, if you're Christian parents and you're homeschooling your kids, just look at your kid when you put him or her to bed tonight and they close their eyes, look at them and know that they are the last great hope for civilization on the planet, and know that you're doing what God wills you to do in protecting your children from the corruption of the world. All right. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, well, this might have made it into the first kill all the lawyers file, but it would have violated the the figurative nature of the file. This is from Miami. Tallahassee police, this is from CNN, Dateline Miami. Tallahassee police have released the 911 call made back in July by a neighbor who told officials he heard a loud bang before seeing a vehicle drive away from the house of a Florida State University law professor. Yes, the neighbor says on the call, "I don't know if someone tried to shoot him, the law professor, or if he shot himself." How would you know? He's a lawyer. There's even odds, right? That someone would shoot him or he would shoot himself? It's hard to say, right? Well, the dispatcher mistakenly coded the call with a lower priority than as if someone had been shot and might be dying. It took 7 minutes for the dispatcher to correct the mistake, but that actually caused another delay because the new code he gave it made it a high priority for police, but a possible security risk for paramedics, so the ambulance had to wait until the police cleared the area. It took 12 minutes for officers to arrive, and by then, the lawyer was dead. Not figuratively, but actually dead. A Florida State University law professor, dead. So the 911 dispatch team is working to correct any systemic issues. They admit it may have been a mistake to mention that the man who'd been shot was a lawyer. That may have, in the system, automatically lowered his priority to that below an injured dog call. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Should the Lord tarry, I'll be back next week. I want to thank Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.